And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and thank you so much for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we encourage you to check out any or all of our guests as we are excited about beginning. We're celebrating our fourth anniversary, which means we're beginning our fifth year of doing this radio program. I'm extremely excited about that. And we're going to be talking with we're going to be going to the movies today, but in a very interesting way. We've had our guest on before, and I said I'd like to have you back on to talk about the last 10 years, Oscar winners, and we're going to do that in a specific way. But before we do, I want to remind you, of course, that we will also be talking with Beth McDonald, our AAA editor. She'll be giving us insights into what's going on in the universe. I also want to let you know about an event that's coming up September the 10th of this year. That's right, next Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. It is a creating meaningful work and offering leadership in the community. And basically, it's remembering and recovering some information that we have here. Our natural condition. It's a review of a work history from the perspective of loss as gain, gain as loss. Now, this is going to be going on at the Center of the Heart at 487 North Turnpike Road here in Santa Barbara, California. If you'd like more information, feel free to call 805-964-4861, 964-4861. My guest, the woman is putting on this this workshop, is Sura Charlay, I beg your pardon. And she serves as a representative, a minister, and guide, as well as a retreat guide with the Sufi Order International. We're going to have her on the program later on today, but she's also going to be a featured guest in November. But we wanted to let you know about this event that she has coming up. We encourage you to stay tuned to Tell Me Your Story here. And we would like for you to, again, make that phone call if you're interested in participating in this extraordinary event. Early registration, if you get in before, early registration is irrelevant. But you can call again that number of 964-4861, 964-4861. Brent Merchant is my guest, and we are going to be talking about and going to the movies. So please, everybody, if you would, for the courtesy of those around you, turn off your cell phones, turn off your pagers and your beepers, because if you don't, I'll come around and smash them with a hammer. Isn't that a nice way to start a show, Brent? Nice to have you back.
It sure is. Nice sentiments, exactly.
Now, for those who haven't heard you talk with us before, you're not a movie critic. You're a movie analyst who analyzes movies from a very unique perspective, that creative, conscious creative perspective.
Conscious creation, yes, I do.
Conscious creation. And you have a book. I believe it's called Get the Picture?
Yes, it is called Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies.
And you have a website,
brand new website, called BrentMarchant.com.
Ooh,
easy enough to remember.
Nice. We'll be linked to it as well. And we want to talk about, now last time we had you on, we talked about a lot of your top 100, and we went through a bunch of different movies. And I thought, you know, it would be interesting to see if we could track the trends over, say, I said the last 50 years, but I think that was a little too ambitious. So we focused on just the last 10 years, the 21st century, the first decade, and the Oscar-winning movies, whether it be the actual film that won the award or the director or the actors, actresses, and so forth. Be that as it may, let's take a look at that whole concept first of what is a conscious creation movie.
Well, a conscious creation movie would be any one of the movies that that exemplifies some of the principles that I talk about in my book. Has to do with things like recognizing the fact that the conscious creation process exists to begin with, and then going into some of the principles that help to make it work, like understanding your power of choice, understanding your power of change, realizing that we each have our own perspective of how we do things based on the idea that we each create our own reality through conscious creation, and so on and so forth. So basically, you know, the movies that I've looked at for the past decade, which includes Oscar winners and some others,
okay,
basically they illustrate some of the various points that I talk about in my book.
Okay. Well, let's go back. I guess let me ask this question, because you've got the list there in front of you. Do you see a positive increased trend, or is it kind of flatline, or a decreased trend towards these types of movies?
I think the overall trend is on an upward spiral. It kind of goes in waves. You might not have anything for a long time, but then you'll have quite a few that come through all at once. For example, there were a couple of movies that came out this year. They're not on the list, but I mean,
and those
you
are
like three or four movies that came out in the course of this year that all had very prominent conscious creation themes in them, and that was coming after a period where there hadn't really been a lot for a while. A couple of the pictures in particular that I note in that regard would be The Adjustment Bureau and Source Code, and Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris.
Now, I've seen The Adjustment Code, and that was – no, wait, I may be thinking of the wrong one. This is the one where the gentleman, he's going into political life, and they are
Yes. Basic
– okay, so I did –
Yeah, that's The Adjustment Bureau.
And, of course, I got to thinking about that, and I started comparing that to, say, a movie of several years back called The Minority Report with Tom Cruise.
Right.
Same kind of thing in that. Only they're going to catch you before you commit the crime to either stop you or they sentence you or whatever. And I often got to wonder about that. Well, wait a minute. But if I'm supposed to make a left turn – like in the aforementioned movie, and I choose to go right, doesn't that screw up your plans? You know? It also goes to the whole concept that you hear about, especially in sci-fi and Star Trek in particular, about, you know, screwing up the timeline. You know, if you go back into the past and you step on a butterfly theory, that kind of thing.
Well, one of the things that the Adjustment Bureau had going for it is it incorporated the notion of choice and free will into it.
Yeah.
Which basically kind of takes some of what was espoused in movies like The Minority Report and turned it on its ear, where it basically said, oh, no, it's fixed and you can't change it. This is saying, you know, yeah, there is the option of choice and change available to you, and, you know, it might end up taking you in some unexpected directions because you're the one calling the shots, ultimately.
Yeah. Well, I received a book in the mail not too long ago about I don't have the title off the top of my head, but the title gist was Destiny versus Choice.
Mm-hmm.
That may very well be the title. And I'm planning on having this individual on the program because I've often thought, and this is just me personally, that if this is all an accident, this whole universe and you and me and the planet and everything, an evolutionary quirk, then my life doesn't really have any meaning. Ergo, it doesn't matter what I do. But there's something inside of me that says my life does have meaning, because, and this was not an accident. Now, that's just me. You, Brent, might say, no, this was an accident, and you can go out and rape and pillage and plunder because it doesn't matter.
Well, basically, I think the concept of destiny is a little bit misunderstood. I think a lot of times people look at destiny as it's hard and fixed and rigid and unchangeable, and there's just no, you know, that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think destiny has to do more with tendencies. You know, that there's a higher than likely probability that you're going to go down a particular path. But that particular path is filled with lots of variations, you know, within it.
Yeah.
There's some that basically say, okay, you're going to do your greatest feat on this particular date. And there's another one that says you're going to do your greatest speed on this particular date. They're all in the going along on the same general lines. It's just a question of which variation are you going to fall within. Now, there are some at each end of the extreme where clearly you may opt out of it entirely. But given the fact that most of the probabilities are going down one particular path, it's more likely than not that you'll end up on one of those. Does that make sense?
It does. It's like you come to a fork in the road. No matter which fork you take, you're going to come to another one. And it doesn't matter which one you take there because you're going to come to another one. and eventually you're going to hit that your best achievement day kind of thing.
Right.
It's
exactly.
Almost, it's as far as destiny is concerned, it's almost inevitable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now,
but it's not hard and fast inevitable.
Right.
In the fact that it has to unfold according to a particular timeline or time frame or things like that.
Are the words destiny and fate synonymous in your mind?
No, because fate to me implies the idea that it's absolute and fixed and there's no changing it.
Okay.
Whereas destiny is, gives you a little more wiggle room.
And I read a book. I was given this book when I was 21 years old. I carry it in my briefcase everywhere. It's called The Impersonal Life. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
I've read it a number of times. I even recorded it. I recorded it. The gist of it is this. The book is written from the perspective of the universe, your higher self, and it makes the case that you think you have choice, and I let you think that for your ego's sake. But you, in essence, you don't really, because you're doing my will, which is your will, but it's mine. I mean, you know, and it, you can actually, you know, get a brain cramp, you know, by trying to process that. But then as I interview people, even such as yourself, and we talk about listening to that intuitive voice, well, if we're all listening to the intuitive voice, the higher self, which is connected to the same exact source, then isn't it like we are multiple cogs in the same system achieving the same result? And in effect, we think we have choice, but when we're following that still small voice inside, we're flowing more freely without resistance through life, and we're actually heading down a destined, possibly, potentially predestined direction. I mean, if we're all going back to the one, that's the ultimate. That's where it all ends up, and many, many of the religions say this. Well, isn't that sort of predestined or even fated?
I think it depends upon which of those paths that you get on. For another, for example, I think you ultimately have a choice of deciding which one you get on.
Okay.
But once you're on it, then the events may be a bit more, I don't want to say fixed, but I mean, things are going to unfold according to a certain scenario.
Right, right.
For example, if you decide, okay, I have an easy path or a difficult path. If you decide to choose to get on the difficult path, well, then you're going to have to take with what the difficult path, what comes with that.
Right, right, yeah.
But choosing to get onto that path in the first place, I think, still comes down to you.
Well, yeah, I would agree.
You know, your higher self, I think, is going to intervene and basically try to warn you, saying, well, you know, if you go the difficult path, this is what you're going to face. And if you choose to do it anyways, you know, it's kind of like your higher self, I think, sort of shrugs his shoulders and says, oh, well, this is what you chose, you know.
Yeah. It's
your fault.
And you
have to kind of let it play out.
Exactly. Exactly. It's sort of like rolling a stone down a hill. Once
exactly.
It starts, you know, it's pretty much inevitable unless it hits something really hard to stop it. It's going down to the bottom of the hill. And anything or anyone in its way, it's going to take out.
However, the other thing, too, is you're going to find that, you know, each of those different paths has got subsequent forks in it.
Okay.
Okay. Uh-huh. So if you get to a particular point and you say, I don't like this.
Yeah.
You might say, okay, let's get off this path and get on to a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll go down the new one, and again, you will get whatever comes with that new path.
Yeah.
For better or worse, until you come to, again,
the next fork.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get back to the dark room and the movies. Now, how you went back to 2000 or 2001?
I think I went back to 2000, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and start there, if that's the way you have your list, and the oldest films first. And what I find fascinating is you create a great deal of frustration from your first show because you have that top 100 list, and I've seen many of those movies. But then there are even more that I haven't seen. It's like, oh, I've wanted to see 67 of those movies, but I don't have a lifetime long enough to see them all. What do we have for 2000?
let's see.
And again, these are not necessarily Oscar winners, but they may be, but they were also very profound from your perspective.
Right. Actually, well, my analysis went back to 2000.
Okay.
But my first entries come from 2002.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's see. The two movies that I have from that particular year, one was the movie Whale Rider.
Did not see.
Which was a movie that came out of New Zealand. And basically had to do with the life of a young Maori girl.
Mm-hmm.
Who appeared to be destined to become leader of her tribe. But because, you know, the tribe had established the idea that, no, I'm sorry, this is a male-only club, that she couldn't rise to her destiny. Well, she had other plans.
And the title of the movie, does that kind of imply?
Yeah, basically the whale rider is the person who is... It signifies who the leader of the tribe ultimately is.
Ah, okay.
One who is able to master becoming one who is capable,
right,
of, quote-unquote, taming the whale,
right,
to become the rider of it. It's a beautiful movie. It's a movie that didn't get a whole lot of recognition, although it did get a nomination for Best Actress for the young girl,
mm-hmm,
who played the would-be tribal leader. Beautifully filmed, wonderful technical aspects to it in terms of things like the soundtrack and the cinematography, and it shows you a side of the world that you don't really, you know, get a whole lot of exposure to.
Yeah.
But the thing I liked about it so much from the conscious creation standpoint was the fact that, you know, conscious creation is driven by what we believe, you know, what we think we're capable of,
yeah,
what we think we can do, and she's being told no, you can't do this. But her beliefs had other plans.
Yeah. So what was his second movie?
The second movie from 2002 was the movie Signs.
I saw
by M. Night Shyamalan.
And that was with Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson, yes.
We saw that, yes. And by the way, I want you to know, and I've said this on this program before about M. Night Shyamalan's movies, I love his movies and his promos, because the promos for his movies are usually turning this film into a horror flick.
Yes.
At the end of the movie, and specifically at the end of, I believe it was called Awakening, had to do with the plants and the, you know, the some scent or something was given up.
The Happening.
And I loved the end of that movie, not the end of the movie, but when the movie ended in the theater where my wife and I saw it, I'm going, wow, that was really cool. I loved that film. From the back of the theater, a young voice yelled out, "Is that it? Is that all there is?" And I thought, boom, right over your head. Missed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, his movies tend to be, they work on multiple layers and multiple levels.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times his work is very misunderstood. And I remember when Signs in particular came out, there were a lot of people saying, oh, you know, there wasn't a very good Alien movie. Well, you know, the whole Alien storyline, it's just a pretext. You know, this movie basically has to do with the idea of learning how to face your fears.
Yeah, yeah.
And the alien invasion pretext is just a way of getting you into exploring that particular notion. When the movie came out, it was interesting to read the reviews, because the critics who got it loved it.
Yeah.
And the critics who didn't get it said it wasn't a very good Alien movie. So that's, it's kind of unfortunate, the fact that it sort of got knocked around needlessly,
mm-hmm,
you know, criticized a lot more than it should have been. But to this day, it's still one of my favorite movies when it comes to the notion of facing fears, which is really critical in conscious creation, because if you're not going to face them, you're not going to move forward.
Exactly.
Very simply. It literally comes down to a question of nothing ventured, nothing gained.
You talked before about the road and the fork in the road. Well, those fears are like barricades across the roadway. If you aren't willing to face those fears, you're not getting through those barricades, and you have to go through them, or you have to remove them. You can't go around, under, or over. You have to face them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, exactly. So that's 2002. And by the way, I'm curious, has M. Night Shyamalan, I haven't ever seen any interviews with him. Are you familiar with, because he's got lots of other films that I know. The Village was one great one. That one is one of my favorites of his.
I think he has done some, but I don't recall any that he's done in recent years that I'm aware of, mainly because a lot of his movies have bombed at the box office.
That's too bad. Yeah.
Again, because I think a lot of times they're misunderstood.
Yeah. But. Well, before we go to break here, okay, we're going to come back and talk about 2003 and bring it up to 2011. We'll see if we can't stay on track and on the path and not take a fork. I'm curious as to your feelings about the services that are available for on-demand like Netflix and Hulu and those kinds of things. Is that giving these kinds of films an opportunity, or are these services – like those that I've mentioned, only featuring the box office biggies?
Well, in terms of Netflix, I mean, the library is phenomenal. I mean, in terms of being able to find things, I'm amazed a lot of times that they've got as broad an inventory of films that they do. So, yes, I think some of these services are really helping to level the playing field for some of these movies because, you know, some of them might not get a particularly long run in the theater. In some places, they don't even play at all because there's no market for, you know, independent films or movies of a metaphysical or spiritual nature. So having services like this makes them available to audiences that may not otherwise be able to get them. So, yeah, I think they're a great thing.
You know, I think that what's happening with film, as far as the internet is concerned and on demand, is the same thing that happened to music. See, I always criticize, even when I was a kid growing up in the late 60s and 70s listening to music on the radio, I'm thinking, well, yeah, I like that top 40 song you just played for me, Mr. DJ, but I like this guy's voice. What else has he done?
Yeah.
You are only playing side A. What's on side B? Or what about the other 11 tracks on his album? And now the record industry cannot tell me what I like and don't like from a given artist. And so with movies, it's now the same thing. You're not going to tell me. I can now go to Netflix and say, yeah, these are the genres I like. Tell me what's out there.
Well, exactly. And I think the other thing, too, is the fact that an increasing number of people now are looking to watch movies at home.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't enjoy the theater experience as much as they used to for one reason or another, either, you know, the cleanliness of the theater or the crowds
plus the fact
or the cost or any of those things.
For the price of a single ticket, I can watch a movie a night for a month, whereas it would cost me, if it's a $7 ticket or $8 ticket, and that's still being pretty cheap, you're still talking about like $240, and that's just a ticket, $240 a month.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you got to buy...
The going rate here in Chicago for most evening performances is $11.
Oh, man.
And if you're looking at something that's in 3D, it's probably going to be $13.
Eh, I don't need 3D. Thank you. 2D is fine. Thank you so much.
And if you're looking for something that's in IMAX, it's probably about $16.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so they've gone up.
Yeah. You're going to have to buy the TV that will accommodate those things, but that's entirely up to you. You can spend that. But it's a one-time purchase, and you get to enjoy it the rest of your life. Brent Merchant is my guest, and we're going to continue talking about the rest of the past decade of films that are conscious creation films here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away. I'm Richard Dugan with Brent Merchant. We're talking about the movies, and we've already thrown three people out of the theater because they did not turn their cell phone off, and it rang, and so you're out of here. I produce a golf show on occasion, and if the cell phone goes off, it's a bogey, and you're fined $500 and penalized three strokes. We're talking about the movies today here on Tell Me Your Story because they are, and have you chime in on this comment, they do form the beliefs and the concepts in our minds. They reinforce or help to shift and change them. I mean, in a way, that's kind of – it's not just entertainment anymore. I mean, if it were just entertainment, why all the product placement? That kind of – so there's a message in there. M. Night Shyamalan, who we mentioned in our first segment, he's putting out a particular message, right?
Oh, yes.
So are all
multiple
of the
messages.
Multiple messages. Yeah, they're layered. I don't think any one filmmaker or film puts out just a single message. I do have to say, and I'll just throw this out before we jump back into 2003. I wasn't going to watch it, but I did see from end to end the movie Paul. And okay. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, my. And, of course, I'm going, it's typical humans and the way they're treating this guy. It's like, come. But he had such a great sense of humor, you know, and how
yes,
he.
That was a fun movie.
Oh, it really was. I could watch that multiple times. It was cute, but it was fun. So let's go to 2003 and let's move forward here as we head towards the end of our path here on the program.
Well, 2003, my favorite movie from a conscious creation perspective for that year was Under the Tuscan Sun.
Missed it.
Which was, some have characterized it as a chick flick, some have characterized it as sort of a romantic comedy. But basically, it has to do with a woman who is reinventing herself mm-hmm. and reinventing her life. And you can see how she's becoming consciously aware of the fact that she's doing it as the movie unfolds. Initially, she seems to kind of go with the flow of things and kind of wonders why she's doing it. But then she realizes when she looks at the reality that exists around her, it really ultimately reflects the things that she said she wanted to do. It didn't always necessarily take the form of what she said she wanted to do, but the intent and the goal were fulfilled. And once she becomes aware of that, then all of a sudden she feels very empowered by all this and realizes, well, if I can do this, what else can I do? So it's a wonderful, charming movie, beautifully filmed. Diane Lane is wonderful in it. It's one of the movies that didn't really catch a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Those who have seen it love mm-hmm. it.
Would you say that Shirley Valentine is akin to that?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Somewhat. I think Under the Tuscan Sun handles the subject matter better.
Okay.
But it is very much along the same lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to see, again, you're giving me, when I interview people and they start mentioning books, okay, those are books I'll read when I retire, but I'm not retiring, so I may never get to them. And you're giving me a boatload of movies that I'm going to have to watch. And someone says, well, you know, you do need to upgrade to a smartphone, and then you can watch all those movies on your smartphone. So wait a minute. If I'm watching movies on my smartphone while I'm at work, aren't I supposed to be working? My productivity will go way down. And...
Well, I won't tell anybody.
Okay, fine. All right, let's go to jump to 2004.
2004, my choice for that year was an unusual movie called What the Bleep Do We Know? And in many ways, that is it's sort of a documentary,
yeah.
And it's sort of a fictional movie.
I've seen it in its sequel.
And it's got animation in it. But basically what it does is it helps to explain the conscious creation process in theoretical terms
right.
through the documentary portion,
mm-hmm.
and then has a fictional narrative to illustrate how these concepts play out. So it's really wonderful in the fact that you're getting sort of both the theory and the application behind this process in one movie.
It was fun to watch. It really was.
It really was.
Because you never knew what was coming next.
It had amazing staying power in the theater. I mean, when I first heard about this, I thought, yeah, this will last a week. But at least here in Chicago, it played in the theater for, about 3 months,
wow.
3-4 months.
Wow.
Which for a movie with subject matter like that is really kind of unusual. The thing that I liked about it in many ways is that even though it came out before the DVD, The Secret, which explains sort of the basics of conscious creation and the law of attraction,
right?
This basically takes what is discussed in The Secret and builds upon it.
Mm.
It's kind of strange that it came out before The Secret, but basically I think of The Secret as sort of like Conscious Creation 101 and What the Bleep Do We Know as like Conscious Creation 102.
Ah, okay. But they came out in reverse.
Yes.
Interesting. All right, so we have What the Bleep,
mm-hmm.
and is that single film for 2004?
That's a single film for 2004.
All right, so 2005.
2005, I chose the movie Crash, which was the Oscar winner for Best Picture.
Now, am I correct? Was that the movie that was made in Ireland?
No, that was made in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. For some reason, because I was at that time listening to Irish radio, the news talk radio station over there in Ireland, and they kept mentioning the movie Crash, and I'm thinking, okay, I got to go see this Irish film because they kept talking about it.
Well, Crash was something of a surprise when it ended up winning the Oscar for Best Picture, and there were a lot of people who were disappointed about it, basically because they felt that it was kind of simplistic in its message and so forth. Again, this is a movie that was, a lot of the critics kind of oversimplified what it was. They characterized it as a movie that talks about race relations in Los Angeles. Well, there is an aspect to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing, this is more a movie about connectedness.
Okay.
And which is important in understanding conscious creation and the fact that one thing always leads to another and to another and to another, and how the threads of this tapestry are all interwoven. When you practice conscious creation, you're not working like from a salad bar. You know, you're creating the totality of the reality that you're experiencing, not just portions of it. And Crash helps to show how that works by having all these interwoven storylines with one another.
Mm.
Like I say, there are aspects of it that do deal with the question of race relations in L.A., but there's also a lot more. It has to do really more with the idea of personal connectedness. And when you watch the film, that's actually in the very opening line of the movie, where one of the characters mentions the fact that with life in L.A. being what it is, so many times people feel so disconnected to one another that they will literally crash into one another just to feel something.
Wow. It was the phrase just came to me as you're describing this was 6 degrees of separation.
In many ways. It's sort of like taking 6 degrees of separation and putting it on steroids. You know, because there are so many characters in this movie, and they're so all interwoven with one another.
Yeah.
And it's a great ensemble cast. I mean, just really wonderful collection of people in it.
Now, ironically, the image that came up in my mind when you mentioned race relations was the movie District 9.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, oh, why did that come in my head? But obviously, it was happening in Los Angeles so initially. But it was a very interesting juxtaposition as far as the races, not black and white, but alien versus human. And so that was rather interesting. So Crash for 2004.
Crash for 2005.
Oh, 5. 2005. So now we're moving into 2006, the year that I moved.
From where?
From Phoenix to Santa Barbara.
Okay. 2006, I chose the movie Stranger Than Fiction, which is a comedy in which an author is writing a book and struggling with writer's block, because she can't decide what she wants to do with one of her characters. Not realizing, of course, that her feelings in this are so invested that the character has actually come to life.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, so it ends up being this very interesting story about when creation and creator meet. Who decides what's going to happen?
Oh.
Yeah, it's a wonderful little comedy with Emma Thompson and Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, and it's smartly written, and it's got a wonderful voiceover narration done by Emma Thompson, because she's the author. And it also stars Queen Latifah and Dustin Hoffman. It's just a really wonderful little picture that, again, it's one of those movies that those who know it love it. Didn't get a really wide play when it first came out, but people who see it, they certainly enjoy it.
Yeah. So we have 2006, that title once again, Stranger Than Fiction.
Stranger Than Fiction.
All right. So now we move into, we're now already into the second half of the first decade of the 21st century. Wow. Say that one 4 times fast.
Oh,
you have another movie?
For 1 second. Yeah, I missed one here. Another one for 2004.
Ah.
Yeah. The film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I missed the movie and the title. Like, what?
It's sort of a romantic comedy, but it's also got kind of a sci-fi element to it. This was a film starring Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, in which we have a couple that decides to... they decide to break up, and the experience of having endured the difficulties in the relationship was so much that they actually want to go through a procedure to have their memories erased of one another. But they begin to find that maybe they don't want to do that.
So,
so in the course of having the having the memory erased, they then try to stop the process and kind of reconstruct things. But in the process of changing the memories, it shows how changing the memory also changes your experience of what you went through, which is interesting because it's something that a lot of psychiatrists have talked about when it comes to people going through and kind of reprogramming their thoughts, maybe about when they were growing up.
Yeah.
Or that
sort of altering the memory.
Yeah, that maybe everything wasn't as bad as you thought it was. Or that maybe certain things that you thought, you had rose-colored glasses over, maybe you need to go back and take a look at that to see for what it really truly was. So this explores that whole idea within the context of a couple trying to decide whether or not they want to save their relationship based on having this memory rewriting going on.
Interesting
movie, and the visuals in it are interesting, too, because you kind of show, when they depict the memories on the screen, you show how they can be constructed or deconstructed visually.
So 2000,
which is really fascinating way of doing it.
Wow. Again, it brings to mind probably a movie you will have from 2007, 8, 9, or 10, but I won't jump into that. I won't jump there right away. That was 2004, that particular film. So let's jump forward again. We did 2005. So 2006, you have one or two films in there or more?
2006, I had Stranger Than Fiction.
Stranger Than Fiction, okay.
Right.
So 2007.
2007, I didn't have anything for that year.
Really?
No. Some years are better than others.
So that's where you're saying it ebbed and flowed.
Goes in waves.
Yeah. Whether it was an Oscar winner or not, if you didn't find it, you didn't find it. So then the next film sequence would be 2008.
2008. I have the movie Doubt, which might seem like an unusual choice because it's a movie that's kind of on a darker side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I chose that movie is because if we each create our own reality, then we each have our own perspective of things.
Right.
And the whole notion of what exactly becomes quote-unquote absolute truth becomes, almost moot in
right.
some ways.
Right.
Because if we each have our own perspective, we're each going to have our own reality and we're each going to have our own truth, which troubles people a little bit. But I think that's it's important to recognize that that's kind of the nature of the beast when it comes to understanding how conscious creation works, because obviously, one person's heaven may be another person's hell, and so on and so forth. One of the reasons why I like Doubt is that you've got a storyline where you have four perspectives on essentially the same story playing out at the same time. And it leaves you constantly wondering which one of these is quote-unquote correct, but then you come to realize that they're all correct.
Wow.
In terms of the truthfulness.
Exactly. You have to take all the points on the circle collectively to get the whole truth. It's like 10 people can see an accident and they see 10 different perspectives. Collectively,
exactly.
They have the whole truth there.
Exactly. And the thing is, if you ask each of those people how did things actually happen, each of them will be thoroughly convinced that what they saw was the right version.
Right. Okay, so that's 2008, and we're fast approaching the end of our program here, but
2009, we have Avatar.
Oh, I saw that one in the theater.
Yeah. Wonderful movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it covers so many different aspects of conscious creation on so many different levels.
In spite of the fact that critics said, it's the same old Cowboys and Indians story. Same old story.
To a certain degree, but you had a different outcome. And also the fact that when you're learning about, quote-unquote, the Indians in this particular story, you're seeing things where you're seeing aspects of their culture, which have to do with the idea of understanding that we're all connected, that things spring forth from within to the external.
Yeah.
Those are all really hallmarks of how conscious creation works.
Well, I know Jim Cameron would appreciate your vote. 2009.
That was 2009.
And 2010.
And 2010, we have The King's Speech.
which I saw from about a third of the way. Ian, I've got to see it from the very beginning.
Okay.
And again, I could relate to it, not because I have had a stuttering problem, but a visual impairment in high school and grade school, going from birth, and dealt with bullies and dealt with all this kind of stuff, and then had to read in class. And okay. It's the same thing. He's up there giving a speech, and it's got to be given in such a way, and it's like, wow. So how profound.
Well, and the thing that I like so much about the King's Speech, too, is the fact that it has to do more than with just learning how to overcome a disability. It has to do more than with just dealing with a speech impediment.
Right.
It's learning how to come to believe in yourself.
Exactly. And, confidence.
And that's so critical. Yeah. In terms of being successful with conscious creation. If you don't believe it for yourself, it isn't going to happen.
Exactly. Give us your website again.
It's www.brentmarchant.com.
And conscious creation is the focal point of this analyst's movie-going proclivities. And, Brent, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Get the Picture is his book. It's available through his website, brentmerchant.com. We will be linked to it as well. And I thank you again for joining us. It's fabulous.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. And congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you. And the fascinating thing is someone's going, well, what about 2011? We haven't finished it yet. So we'll have you back early part of next year, maybe right before the Oscars or something, to talk about the movies of 2011 and see what did and didn't strike your fancy in that regard.
Sounds good to me.
And I'll see if I can't see a few of the movies in 2011, and we'll go from there. Hey, thanks very much, and we will talk to you next time.
Great. Thanks, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Join us again next Saturday at this same time. Until then, love to all.